WBRB UK. Worse teeth, better accents.
Hello, hello, and indeed ahoy hoy. Welcome to episode 427 of BRB UK. It's me here, I'm Dan, hello, and I'm joined this week by only one other person, and that one other person is Tim.
Just me?
It is just you. Coalman is doing Coalman things.
Someone
has fired the coal signal, and he is running about the streets of Uxbridge with his pants outside his trousers. You know, look, he's happy, right?
Yes.
He's happy, and at least... Although Batman doesn't actually wear a mask. He's quite specific about wearing something on his head other than the bit that you want to cover in a COVID-safe manner. So hopefully he's not channeling his inner Batman. He's more channeling his inner Deadpool or something.
He might be channeling his inner Batman. I did send him a Batman-related present this week. Although it was the weirdest thing. Like, this week has all been feeling like my real life is video game quests.
All right, you
for
might,
Coleman,
okay.
I had to get three random objects. It was a Batman-related present, mm-hmm. a flat cap, and a 4K camera. And then I had to post them.
Mate, if you're giving 4K cameras out, I'll have one. I don't want.
Yeah, and then I had to post them to Coleman. Well, it was his 4K camera. That's hence the fact that I was giving
it
to him.
Okay, well that explains
it.
All right,
that was okay. But then, yeah, I had a thing today when I realised, like, to get into my office, and I will change some of these details for security purposes, I have to use the little key to open the little door, and for the rest of the day, that acts as a shortcut to the outside world in case I need to go get stamina from one of the shops.
All right, that's otherwise known as food. I thought you were about to go, like, I had to escort three people from the bus stop to my place of work.
Office, I need the big red key, which is a bit on the nose.
Okay.
To then open up the main door. And yeah, I don't know. It felt very quest like. I don't know why. I keep on getting reminded of things like that this week.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Well, there we go. Thanks, Tim.
Yeah.
Tim lives in video games. It's why. So, yeah, I mean, what other weird things might you have in your life if things like a video game? Do you have, like, only one set animation for eating something, for example, and 9 times out of 10 you end up inserting food into your forehead?
It's the NPCs in my life that bother me more than anything else.
Wow.
Standing there in the T-pose position and, you know.
Okay, I mean, I'm slightly tempted to get your flatmate just to do that to freak you out, to be honest with you. Just like, do you mind just standing
just walking in
a T-pose? Yeah. You just try and psych him out. Assert your dominance via a T-pose. Do it. Anyway, no, my life doesn't appear to have turned into video games.
No.
Unless I just keep reloading the same save every day. That's what it's been like for the past... Hey, COVID joke.
There you go. Groundhog Day COVID joke.
Mm-hmm. Actually, genuinely was Groundhog Day, though, wasn't
yes,
it?
Yes, yes. That's part of the reason I mentioned it as well.
I have no idea why... All I know, some bloke wearing a big hat troubling some groundhog and weather.
And 6 more weeks of winter.
I don't know. I could have told you that by the fact that when I step outside wearing nothing, my balls still try to make
a
beeline
for
the
shadow?
Inside of my abdomen. No, I didn't, but they retracted right into my abdomen.
Good.
So therefore, it's far too cold. Anyway, Tim.
Yes.
You've played some games,
yes.
I understand. And not only have you played some games, you have cabled some cables.
I have cabled some cables. For the first time ever, I will be reviewing cables this week. But should we do some games first?
Know, I mean, bearing in mind how you get distracted by, you know, menus in games, I cannot wait for the roller coaster that is you reviewing a cable. Right? But I can't deal with that excitement straight away.
No.
So what I'd like to hear about is Destruction All-Stars, because this is a game I think we've all heard about, and you're the only one of us with a PS5, so the only one
yep.
who can play it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it looks like it might be all of the good times, but until you get your hands on it, it's difficult to know. So Destruction
yes.
All-Stars, PS5, came out on PlayStation Plus, and it's kind of, it's a bit Fortnite-y, maybe. It's a bit Rocket League. It's a bit all kinds of beat-em-up-y stuff. So, Tim... What do you think of it?
Yeah, and it's a good sort of crossover. It's definitely got the kind of arcade racing destruction derby element at its very core. But the kind of slight different path it takes is that you can and are somewhat encouraged to get out of your vehicle and run around the arena as well, basically.
That seems silly.
Yes, it does. But as I said, you are somewhat encouraged to do so. Basically, there's 16 different characters. Each character has a different power, what they call a breaker, on for themselves and for their individual hero vehicle, which basically you can activate your individual hero vehicle, and then it's got a breaker itself as well, basically.
So hang on. So
yeah.
Question the first. What is a breaker?
It's just a special power, basically.
All right. And give me an example of a special power.
Well, they all work slightly differently, and everyone has a different power. Some are a bit more offensive.
Hence why I asked for an example. Yes.
Some are a bit more offensive, some are a bit more defensive, and some of them a bit more like they get you around the environment faster and stuff like that, basically. So one of the first guys that you're introduced to, and I can't remember his exact name for the life of me, but it's Ultimo Barracudo or something
along
those lines.
Sounds suitably generic. Let that pass.
He's a kind of lucha libre wrestler, and he's kind of a big macho guy, and yeah, he gets a big truck as his hero vehicle.
Okay, and hero vehicle, is that the one that is, can you get in any vehicle, but that's your...
You can generally get in any of the generic cars, and they come in different classes. Like there'll be a small nippy car, there'll be a big fast car, and a bigger truck, and then there's various different flavors in between. Standard sort of car settings and standard idea. Big trucks are generally a bit slower, a bit harder. The smaller things are a bit more nimble, and then the speedier stuff. But there's the generic cars, and basically you're running into the arenas to start with. Every match starts with you like running and jumping off an edge, and then you're racing to a set of vehicles that are just some of the generic vehicles at random. And generally there's not enough of those for the amount of players that are playing in the modes, but often. So you're often racing to those, and one of you will get the car, and then one of the other people will jump on the car, because one of the other things you can do is jump on the top of someone's car and either overtake and kick them out of the car and take over their car, or blow their car up, detonate their car, basically.
So, beginning of the match,
yep,
everyone's wandering
around.
Everyone
races for one of their sort of generic cars, standard sort of matches, and there are different modes. There's kind of a mayhem mode where it's just all like carnage. There's one of my favourites, which they did mention before, which is called Carnado, which works really well and is really good. Basically, you've got to get an amount of points by wrecking other vehicles and doing other things in the environment.
Well,
mainly
I do
wrecking
like
stuff and running people over and stuff.
Points.
But the points are tied to the vehicle you're in, and if the vehicle you're in gets destroyed, those points are null and void. But you can bank those points by driving them into the massive tornado in the middle of the arena.
As you do.
Yeah. It's really stupid, but works really well, and that's really good fun.
So are all of these a free-for-all, or is it team-based?
Yeah, there's both. The Mayhem is a solo thing. The Carnado is 8-on-8 multiplayer, basically. And it sounds like they're going to have different variants of these things going down the line, but at the moment in the multiplayer mode in arcade, which you can play by yourself, or in the multiplayer modes, there are four main modes. There's Carnado, which I just described. There's Mayhem, which is a general all-out carnage all on all. There's a Gridfall match, which is basically where different parts of the floor are disappearing and you drive around the arena and you've got limited lives. And if you lose all of your lives, you're out and the last man standing.
Not going to lie, sounds a bit tedious, but carry on.
That works quite well. I quite like that mode as well. And then there's a fourth mode, which I'm spacing on for the moment.
Mystery mode.
It's another 8-on-8 mode, but I can't remember what it is for the moment. But anyway, I'll have a look in a second. But yeah, basically, the flow of most matches is that you're kind of racing to those generic cars at the start, using those cars to kind of build up your score and build up whatever you're doing. You're either collecting... the other match is a 8-on-8 where you've got three zones, like marked A, B, and C, and you need to take control of those zones by banking gears. You get gears by bashing into people, but then you can like in a car, but then you have to get out of your vehicle to actually physically pick those gears up, and you have to get out of your vehicle to physically deposit them in the bank. And it's usually a raised platform that you have to like jump up to get there as well, sort of thing. But I can't remember what the name of that mode is, but that is the other mode. And that, as I said, that works reasonably well as well. They're all quite fun. And some of those modes gives you more and less reasons to get in and out of your car, and then gives more or less advantages to the players that are better out of their car. I mentioned before the first guy that you come across with the big truck. I didn't get around to describing his breakers. When he's running around, he does this weird fireworks thing that I think hurts or maybe distracts people. Sometimes it's a bit difficult to tell what your power does until you've been on the receiving end of that power. Like, there's one of the powers I didn't really see when I was using it. There's a thing called smoking, but because it doesn't put any smoke on your screen, you can't really tell. There's a little bit, but not very much. But when you get smoked, you can't see anything on your screen. Basically, it's completely filled with smoke and stuff like that. So there's things that work differently, and you've got to get a good feel of like playing through and stuff like that. But
that
the
seems
ultimate
a bit
breaker
weird.
It is a bit weird, and but I said when you get used to it, and when you know what you're doing, and you know, okay, that is that person's power attacking me. At first, I struggled a bit with the game and actually dropped it down to easy because there is a lot of like, what the hell is going on? Everybody,
it's like Ace Combat all over again. It is Ace Combat all over again.
But then I fairly quickly put that up to medium, and I've been messing around with hard on the arcade modes, having like won a match in each in medium. Medium seems to be a good kind of average though in terms of and stuff like that. But it does seem that there's going to be quite a lot of balancing between different player powers. The one that I described, Ultimo, or whatever his name is, he's got like a, on his big truck, he's got like a big shield that you can raise on it with the breaker on the vehicle. And that puts a massive shield in front of his vehicle and makes it so that you don't take as much damage head on. And you can also exert more damage when you're ramming through things. Cool. You've also got, everyone has like two basic powers that are on a cooldown timer, and they work as a charge forward or a charge to one side or the other, basically. And once you've used them, it will take a few seconds before you can do it. So you can't just be spamming that the whole time, basically. And you've got to kind of time your hits. And that works reasonably well in the kind of destruction derby setting. That seems quite good. As I said, there does seem to be some balance needed. Like, some of the more powerful characters, there's one that I really like that's really powerful and you can really easily get a good score built up with it, where it sends like an electricity field out around you and damages anyone on foot or in car around you and can hurt or kill them, basically.
Okay.
But you have to get in your hero vehicle and then build that power up, whereas a lot of the other people's powers are instantly available, like that shield one I described is instantly available as you get in the hero vehicle. So you can do it, and then it'll be on a cooldown timer before it becomes available again as well.
So like with the hero vehicles then, so are they just spawn in randomly, or are they always available?
That's on a bar that you have to build up. You build that up by just doing things in the environment, but also there's crystals that are throughout the environment that you can only collect by jumping around, doing a bit of parkour,
and picking them up and get down.
You have to be on foot to pick those up. You can only pick those up.
Well, you can't jump
in
a car, can you? That's one way to get.
Well, you can kind of, you know, go off ramps and stuff, but you can also do things where there's some of those crystals that are harder to get to, where you can literally throw yourself out of your vehicle and kind of aim at them as you're going. And you can get some quite good combinations between jumping around the environment and jumping in and out of cars as well, because in a lot of the modes and in general, the kind of, especially the generic cars are fairly disposable. Like, if one's about to get blown up, you want to get out of that so you don't give a chance to give your opponent the chance to blow that vehicle up, and you want to get a new vehicle and get into the fray so you know you're not out of the action and stuck on the other side of the arena when there's no cars around, sort of thing.
I have another question.
Yes.
I'm confused. Okay. I thought this was person versus personage, but you mentioned easy, normal, and hard. So that's
in the AI. That's in the arcade mode.
Ah, so there is an arcade mode as well as a PvP.
There is a multiplayer, which is generally for the 8v8 modes, or an all-out one versus the other 15 players, like up to 16 of you playing at once, sort of thing. But then there's also the arcade mode, where you can pick any one of the four events types and any one of the arenas, and then which AI difficulty you're playing against. As I said, I've kind of ramped that up as I've gone, as I've been learning. I've also actually played a few online matches, which is a fair, rare thing for me.
How's the online abuse going?
I did play with randoms. It was like, you know, the first night the game was available pretty much, and there was a little bit of lag here and there, but not massive amounts that made things massively enjoyable. Just like the odd time I'd hit a car and then it would disappear or move, you know, a bit further
unless
away.
Unless the car just moved away from you, because that's what cars do. And
cars can do that, Dan, I must admit.
They can do that, yeah. Are you sure it wasn't operator error,
in a weird manner, which makes me think that was definitely
the shenanigans were abound.
But yeah, as I said, most matches have been pretty stable and pretty enjoyable. I haven't had any problems with griefing. I haven't had too many problems, as some people described, of not knowing, playing with other people that didn't know their microphones were on by default and stuff like that, because that seems to be the default setting. But yeah, generally, that seems okay. But the one thing I'd say is it's hard, especially if that's your like going in point. There is also a whole training mode and stuff where you can go through all the different modes and just generally on a free play kind of, you know, just around the arenas just to be able to check them out and stuff like that. But all of that I like. Like, the base game works really well. I have fun with it and I want to play more of it.
But I get a feeling there's a big old butt coming.
Yeah, like,
I do think it's gonna deny.
It's one of those things where, obviously, the online, I think, is going to work better when you're playing with friends as a team and you've got buddies to play that with regularly.
All right.
I'm not sure if you're just playing with online people, I don't know how much griefing there's going to be. I mean, I came, I think, second in my first event. But then I was messing around with other characters that I didn't know quite as well and possibly shouldn't have done in competitive settings, basically.
So why bother with the online mode at all? And is there only unlocks and stuff you can get via that way?
Right, that's the thing I'm a little confused about. There are various currencies in the game. There seems to be XP, which you get for... I think you can only get for playing online.
Okay.
And then there's some currency that you can earn in the game modes that are available that do unlock like emotes and other things for your characters and stuff. And that seems to be the general unlockables. All the characters are there from the beginning, which I guess when you're focusing on the online, you kind of have to make available so there's as much character variety as possible. I don't know that they could investigate like giving different people different starting characters or something, but there does seem to be like two or three characters that seem to be favorited because they seem to be quite strong. I don't know if it's just because they are slightly easier to use than some other characters. There's a guy called Blue Fang that has a kind of big shredder on the front of his car, and a lot of people seem to be favoring him. And the other guy that I quite like that a lot of people are favoring is a guy called Jan, and he's just got like massive spikes that come out of his car and do damage to anything around it. So they're like, he's a really easy one to just drive into a crowd of people, put your spikes up and get a load of points, basically.
I mean, has there been kind of any of the games you've played online, like kind of, you sometimes see this with online stuff, like an unbeatable combo or some kind of really cheap thing that always works? Or is it proven to be a bit nuanced? I mean, do you think you're going to start to see other characters being used a bit more as people work out how to use them effectively?
Yes, and I think there is an element of that, but I do also think there'll be an element of balancing some of the powers so that they are not quite as overpowered as they are, because otherwise I just can't see how some of the characters, like there's one character who's quite good, but like all her breakers and everything are just going faster, basically.
All right.
Don't seem to be that good for actually... For the online modes that you'll be playing in, I can't see how that's going to be very useful at any one time. Like, you can get away from people a bit more easily, perhaps, but I just can't see, like, most of the more aggressive breaker powers, I think, are going to be overpowered compared to other people. The one thing I say where that does balance out a bit is that some of the characters are faster or slower in the arena as well. So when they're actually on foot and stuff like that, it's more difficult for some of the bigger, heavier, chunkier characters to actually get up onto the platforms and get around the arena. The one thing is, when you activate your breaker, it makes your character a bit more agile as well. You get a double jump that means it's easier to get around the arena and stuff as well.
I have another question.
Yep.
Imagine, if you will, Greta Thunberg is playing this game. We all know
right.
She is an eco-warrior. She'd love being an eco-warrior. Given half the chance, she'd rather eschew her mobilised motorised vehicular mobile and go on foot. Is that a viable option in this game? Could you just go solely on foot if you wanted to?
Again, if you have a power that is more aggressive and damages vehicles, that will help. But you do also get points for dodging other vehicles, and that's something you can use to your advantage. But I would say it's more of a, it feels like something that could, they could encourage more by giving you a greater reward. The risk doesn't quite give you the reward, the reward isn't quite worth the risk, basically. But yeah, as I said, right, that's mostly good things and mostly good stuff. And as I said, I kind of like the cycle of going in and doing a bit of damage and then getting your on-foot breaker. And then you can run around the arena a bit and then you build up to get your special vehicle out. You get that out, you get a load of damage for that. And that kind of getting through that cycle and getting through that cycle as quickly as possible is a good route to success. And I enjoy that and enjoy some of the variety of the different drivers. There's at least like three or four people that I like to use at the moment, even though I think some have advantages over others. The one thing that I'm really disappointed on is that I like this game. I think if you remember, I was looking forward to this game and I was prepared to buy it as a launch title when I thought that might be a possibility.
Yeah.
Later it turned out that that wasn't, and then it got delayed, and then we got the announcement that it was coming free.
I need to channel my inner Coleman here.
Right.
Free.
Yeah, free in inverted commas, because it comes with PlayStation Plus.
Yeah, there we go.
But also, it's not like they've given you the full game like you'd get with a game in another instance. They have given you the multiplayer portion of this game, the arcade, and the practice. That all comes for free.
Right.
And then they gave you a little taster portion of the single-player content, basically.
Right. Okay. So this is all essentially a glorified advert.
This is the slight problem for me. I can understand giving the online portion away and wanting to develop a larger community. That is good. But I would have rather purchased this game for a price and know exactly what I'm getting and what I'm giving in exchange for that. And I don't, as much as I like this game and would like to play more of the single player content, I don't think I can support their business model.
Right.
Because it seems a bit too aggressively priced and a bit too wishy-washy on the details of what you actually get.
So
single-player content is structured in a manner where you have a rival. So the guy that I talked about before, I can't remember the name of for the life of me, Ultimo, let's call him.
Weto's Libre.
Yeah. He's going up against Jan as his rival, and you have like 7 matches where you're battling against him. And in the last match, you battle against his crew, and then you have to defeat him, and that's the kind of final showdown.
Okay.
And that's fine. That works well. The other thing I thought was quite interesting was they actually had entirely different game modes that you haven't seen anywhere else in the game. And one of them was a really good, fun, single-player game. I can't remember exactly what they called it, but it's basically Crazy Taxi. You pick up passengers, they're hanging onto your roof, and you drop them off somewhere, and then you pick up another passenger and carry on. And there are cars driving around the arena trying to bash into you while you're doing that. So you've got like a bit of the destruction derby stuff still in there, basically. But yeah, like it was odd that that is the only place that game mode was available. And then they've got like a Carnado battle where you're going up against him. And then they put in another couple of things, which are essentially like assault course things, one called Crash Course, where you're, I think that's the one where you're driving around into boxes, and there's another one where you're like running around the arena on foot and picking things up. And it's just like, those levels were fine, but not something I'd particularly like to, you know, pay money to do again. I wouldn't particularly play those ones again, having played them. The Carnado ones, the Mayhems, and the other things that were good. Yeah, fine. I've played those a couple of times. But you get 7 levels in each of those things, including the showdown at the end. Each of those 7 levels comes as a pack. Now, the first pack they give you for free. The second pack is 200 points, which I will come back to.
How many points are in a pound?
Well, that's the thing. You get 500 points for 3.99, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
And then it goes up to 1,000 points and 2,000 points.
For each subsequent... So your first one you buy costs you...
No, no, no. That's just the points. If you want to buy points at any time, it's 500 for $3.99, 1,000 for $7.99, and 2,000 for $50.99. So first of all, there you're not getting a saving for buying more points, which I find weird.
Thor's hammer.
Also, it's 200 points for the first seven levels...
Right.
It's 400 points for the second, for the third lot of seven levels.
And do they give you any points to get you started, or?
No. As I said, the first one was free. The second one cost 200. The third one cost 400. So already I've got a slight problem in the, well, I can only buy 500 points or 1,000 points, and I'm going to have to spend 600 points.
Well, that's already a slightly unkind. You.
Point business model, which I don't like supporting that as a base thing. So but that works out at £1.69 and then double that for the next one. And I'm just not sure seven levels where I'm not sure what those levels are and I don't know whether I'm going to like some of those levels. That doesn't add up to a good value proposition to me, no?
And so do the packs kind of keep on increasing in value the more you buy, or is it just your first one's discounted and everything else is?
No. Well, I don't know. The third one isn't even available yet.
Right.
It's on a countdown timer until it's available. I think it's only like a number of hours away. It may be available at some point today.
Okay.
And by the time you're hearing this podcast, it's possibly out. But it just says that the seven levels and seven cosmetic items you can unlock for playing it, basically. But that's exactly the same as was in the free one and exactly the same as what looks like is in the one that costs 200. And then I don't know if it's any bigger, but it's saying it's the same number of levels. And I'm like, well, are some of them going to be 200 and some of them be 400? Or are they all 400 and you've just given the first one half price? Because you haven't said that, and then I don't know...
But
the value proposition of what I'm getting into.
From what you've seen so far, it doesn't really sound like there's much kind of new innovative stuff going on in these extra packs of levels. So
no, as I said, there's modes in there that we haven't seen elsewhere in the game. So I want to play the other modes that I haven't played before, and I want more of that. For me, there should be a single-player portion of the game where that mode is available and you can play high scores and there's a high score table online to battle against kind of thing. And that seems almost like it's something that's been withdrawn from the game to be fed back to. And I don't know if that's necessarily true, but if the mode's there and it's playable for that thing, why isn't it playable online in multiplayer? I guess that's something they have said there's more modes and more characters coming. But again, is that something where I'm going to have to pay for those more modes? Are those more modes going to be available free? Are the characters going to be available free?
Probably not.
I just don't know at the moment. So at the moment, I'm holding off paying any money for a game I'd like to support and give money because I don't know what I'm getting in return. And the evidence I have seen, I don't like the offer. And it got worse at every stage I looked into the offer.
Right. So, but are there any other ways you can earn points? Is it just microtransactions? Is it?
I don't know. I have seen other people asking that that it should be that the points that you have for there should be available to earn some way in game, but I haven't seen them answer that question yet. Basically, I did see a community manager talking on a Reddit thing and just answering some of
the points. Doing that, in all fairness,
answering some of the points the community has raised up, but. They haven't said anything about the business model as far as I've seen so far.
Okay.
And it just feels like a real shame because, as I said, there may not have been many people like me that would have spent £60 on this game, but I would have rather have done that than be this weird feeling where I don't know if I want to play that much of this game because if I do really like it and don't want to support the business model, what position am I in? I'm really confused. As I said, the actual game itself, really enjoyable. Encourage others to play. If anyone is interested in actually partnering up, partying up and playing some at some point, I'll be happy to do so.
How can they find you on PSN, Tim?
Because I think it's a good game. My gamertag is... not gamertag, because it's PlayStation ID. But PlayStation ID is Mighty Mutt, as is my gamertag, as it happens. If you're interested in playing something, give me a shout, because I'd definitely like to play with some community members and see if we get a team together and see if that adds to the fun a little bit, because I think it will. And I definitely want to carry on playing it, but I'm happy playing a bit of it online. My flatmate, who would doesn't really want to play online with my account, isn't that into it, like, would sit around and play this game with me, but we don't have enough of the game to play, and that feels a bit of a shame.
So if you are one of the other three people in the UK with a PlayStation 5, look him up. He will make it an evening to remember.
Mm-hmm,
won't
mm-hmm,
you, Tim?
Mm-hmm.
There yes. we go. That's a promise. That is legally binding. but something which is, well, probably the more self-flagellatory, pleasing yourself, Demon's Souls.
I could talk more Demon's Souls. I have played more Demon's Souls. But right. I could talk about that while talking
Do you
about
want to
the
talk
thing
about
I need
your
to
cables?
Talk about this week. And I think we should get on to talking
Do you want
about
to talk
some cables.
About your cables?
Just for, kind of declaration purposes, I was sent some cables for review purposes. So, Snakebite were kind enough to send me some of their cables just to have a look at and see what they're like. There's stuff
and that's
for
Snakebite with a Y.
Snakebite with a Y, as in
because that's how all cool
bite.
Kids spell it.
Yeah. Basically, they sent me an HDMI cable for the PS5. And, I think all these cables are new out for the new systems, basically, and they all mention that on them. I was sent a charge and data cable for the PS5.
Right.
And a charge cable SX Pro for the Xbox. I'm using on the Xbox S, but, Xbox
right.
Series S, I should say.
So are these like kind of premium-grade HDMI cables?
And these are, basically, they've got various different options available, and they've got various different lengths available. But the stuff that I was sent, let's talk about the charge.
It's what we got, it's what you do with it
first. Yeah, exactly. So charge cable wise, they sent me the 2 meter pro charge and data cable for the PlayStation, and they sent me this one. Says it's the pro, but I couldn't see if there was a difference between the Xbox and the PlayStation ones generally, but the kind of connectors on the Xbox one they sent me are kind of plastic, whereas the ones on the PlayStation one are a much kind of nicer feeling metal. It does seem to be that there's difference in connectors as well, but then I couldn't see if there was a pro version of the Xbox one that had this, because this says it's pro. It does say that it's extra long, and this is the 5 meter length one that they sent me. Now, from what I can see, because their prices,
just to clarify though, Tim. Mm-hmm. So the data and charge cables are presumably for connecting your controller or some other USB peripheral. And has it got USB-C on one end and USB-A on the other? So is it like the oval one you can put in either way? And then your normal USB one on the other end.
And reading from the box, it is USB-C 3.2 Gen 2.
Wow, that sounds modern.
That sounds bang on today. But it does also say, and not all cables seem to say this, but it does say that it does data transfer as well.
Okay.
And it says that comes at 10 gigabits per second.
That gigabytes. Is fast. That's a lot of bits.
That's a lot of bits. So
that's 10
I'm,
times faster than my internet.
Oh well, and that seems like really nice. It's the cables themselves are that nice kind of corded, and it's quite a chunky cord as well. So it's really got some sort of. It feels like it's got some resistance to kind of getting caught up on things and flexed around. The one thing I'd say is that obviously, like the length of cable you need is kind of dependent on the environment in which you're in, obviously. I would say, I've got the 2 meter cable for the PlayStation, and that seems ample for my living room. I don't know that would do for everyone, but the price does seem to ramp up a bit if you go up to the 5 meter cable. From what I can see in the UK, because their website only has prices in euros, from what I can see in the UK, it seems to be just above the £30 mark, £31 or £32, depending on where you're buying it from.
So I have a question.
Yes.
So I'm going to ask this probably more about the HDMI cable and things.
Right, okay, I was going to come on to that in a second.
So with the USB-C cable, so, that's about the roughly the price they seem to be going at. So the 5 meter cable pro is £30.
Yes,
on
Amazon. 31 to 32, depending on retailer, but around that sort of price.
I recently bought a double pack of USB-A to USB-C charge and data cables made by Anker. Other brands are available.
Okay.
Now, I got two of them for 16 quid. So what is the value proposition here for Snakebite? Why should I choose their cables?
I would say that the 5 meter cable is excessive for most people's environments. I could like literally run it round my lounge. It's a bit too long, possibly.
Right.
So I would only say that you'd only need to go to that length if you really needed it, because it does add to the price. I think the 3 meter cable was about £26, and the 2 meter cable, like, even cheaper than that. I think that goes down to almost half that price, I think. But the 2 meter cable for the PlayStation does seem, yeah. As I said, depending on which prices you're looking at and what you're going on, it's, I don't know, they are of the kind of more higher value sort of price points. But they do feel better value than, like, they do feel like you're getting more value for, you know, you're getting something for that investment, basically.
Right, in terms of, like, lifetime warranty, anything like that? You know, if you ever have any problems
with the cable? I haven't seen anything of that nature, but just in terms of, as I said, almost the feel of the cable itself. It sounds silly, but I quite like the fact that they are differently color-coded as well, so I can easily tell them apart. The amount of times I've used the Xbox One on the PlayStation or vice versa, and I don't know that there's any harm in doing that necessarily.
No, but I mean, both of them should just be USB-A to USB-C cables, so the two are interchangeable.
But I don't know about you, I like having one cable for one console and one cable for another, or at least being able to identify between the two. And the Xbox cable's got little kind of green dots on it, and the PlayStation cable has actually got more silver ones, but I quite like the style of both of them, basically.
I think all I would say is, and you know, it's great that they're evidently well-made cables.
Yes.
It sounds like the PlayStation specific ones, or the PlayStation ones that are branded to go as with the PlayStation, they sound like they're made from quite nice premium materials. But
yeah,
you can buy USB-A to USB-C cables of a 3 meter flavour for a tenner.
Yes, and as I said, I think the...
And they're from not bad makes.
Yeah, check how much the 2 meter cable is if you can, if you've got the prices in front of you, because I had difficulty finding that because it wasn't in stock on one of the retailers, so they wouldn't give the price, basically.
Okay, so that's a Snakebite.
Yeah, the 2 meter charge data cable is the one that they sent me. So
I give you the 3 meter. I can't find the 2 meter.
Yeah, exactly. That's the problem I had. So
the 3 meter is £30.70.
Okay, I saw that for £26. I think the 3 meter one.
The 5 meter is also £30.70 on Amazon.
Yeah, as I said, that to me is a bit high on the price, but the smaller length of cables did seem to be less on their website. On their own website, was a case of, I think it's $9.99 for a PS4 cable that was 3 meters.
Right.
But the actual PS5 one, I'll have a look at. So, but yeah, they do also do some other cables that they didn't send me. There is an actual, I think, a better version of the Xbox one that does up to 8K signal as well.
Okay, because, I mean, that's what I was kind of going to come on to, is that obviously, you know, probably the market that tends to probably be lucky enough to own either an Xbox One X or a Series X or a PS5, they're probably not going to blanch too much at a high-end HDMI cable. And obviously, to get the most out of your new console, you're going to want to have a cable that can do HDR, 4K at 120 hertz, or 8K at 60, that kind of stuff. So you want the full HDMI 2.1 spec. I can't recall off the top of my head what grade of cable you get packed in with them. I think they probably will do up to 4K. But again, I mean, what's the added value here?
I think the charge cables are nice, but they're kind of a nice luxury item. Like, as I said, for me, it's more about the cord and the kind of I kind of like that corded cabling rather than the plastic stuff. I prefer the feel of it, and I kind of trust it a little bit more. I assume that because it is used on more things, that it is slightly more durable, because it tends to be used on, you know, the higher end stuff. And yeah, like I've had phone chargers with made of a similar material before, and they're one of the only sort of cables that seem to last for a long amount of time and don't seem to get in too much trouble from being wound up for a long amount of time as well. Also, just on price, going from the Euros price on Snakebite's own website, and just to clear up some of the stuff, they do an HDMI cable that is 4K and 3 meters, that is €20. An HDMI cable 5 Pro that does 4K and 8K, that's 2 meters, and that is again €20. The charge and data cable that I got sent, which is the 2 meter one, is €18.
Okay.
And they do a Pro 5 meter one, which is €20.
Okay.
And a charge cable 5, which is 3 meters and €15.
Although,
so I'm not entirely sure how they convert to.
I mean, that's
pounds,
on the Snakebite. That's the Snakebite. I get my prices from the Snakebite storefront on Amazon. Presumably, though, if all the prices are in euros, if you do order direct, do be prepared to pay some import tax into the UK.
Yeah, at the moment, that could be problematic.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, as I said, I think it's a hard sell. And like you say, most people are going to be sort of. You know, if they're going to spend this money, they might have a make that they already prefer, or it's something that it's. I don't know. I don't think I've owned Snakebite cables before they sent me these ones, and I'm impressed enough with them that I will be. You know, if I need a product in this area, I will probably look to them over and above some of the other companies that I've actually seen in the past, like Venom and stuff like that. I actually really like the look of their. Charge stations as well, which I tend to prefer to some of the charge cables generally, and I haven't been able to get the PS5, the official PS5 one, so I might actually pick up one from them and see how that is as well. Yeah, also we should mention the HDMI cable as well. That is, you know, does up to UHD, it says, basically, which I'm assuming is 4K. It says the max resolution is 3840 by 2160 at 50 or 60 hertz. But then it also does 1440p at 144 hertz and 1080p at 240 hertz, or up to that. It does HDR, it does Dolby Atmos and Dolby Vision. It says HDMI Ethernet channel, HEC. I don't know what that means, but hey. Consumer electronic control, audio return channel, HDCP 2.2, and also is 3D compatible. It's also backwards compatible with PS4. The one thing that this really gave me a good advantage for, the cable that comes with the PS5 is really short. Like, I'm not sure if it's, I think it's probably over a meter, but only just. It's like 1.2, maybe 1.5. It meant it was really difficult to put the PlayStation where I had it, and I couldn't run that cable alongside the rest of my cables. This is a 3 meter cable, and it gave me a lot more room that not only meant that I could run it with the rest of my cables, but also meant that I could move it slightly further away onto a lower down shelf, which I think it is much happier on because it gets a bit more air on that shelf as well. Yeah, my PlayStation does, like, reported some problems last week. I haven't had any problems this week. I don't know if that's entirely coincidental, but I think it's a bit happier in its present environment. The cable itself, again, like the charge cables we were talking about before, it's that kind of braided material. Again, I just quite like the feel of it, and it feels a bit more durable. That remains to be seen. It might be something where I have to come back and talk about these wires, having used them for a long time, because I think that's a slightly better kind of analysis of them, given, you know, the amount of time and the durability of them. But from just early initial impressions of them, I like what they're doing. It's a make that wasn't really on my radar that I think will be in the future. I've been eyeing up their gaming chair. Like, it's a bit expensive, but I quite like the look of it because it's like you can get it in black and all plain, and I quite like the idea of that. But hey, but yeah, like as I said, it's something where I think you'll have to have a need for them to get a good use out of them. But if you're looking for a cable that is possibly longer than the default ones that come in the box, which this was particularly helpful for me, or if you're, you know, you're finding that the charge cable, because again, the charge cables that originally came with the PlayStation, not very lengthy. I'm not even sure I could comfortably sit down with it when it's just the other side of the room sort of thing.
Although I think that's been a bit of a trope for consoles that were originally developed in Japan, because your typical Japanese house, the kind of the front room, all the space between where you sit and where the telly is, isn't it kind of the urban legend is that it's not that far away, hence the tables.
But I'm not sure. Right, there is truth in that. I'm not sure how much that influences them versus, well, it's cheaper if they put in smaller cables and that saves them a lot of
money over the four and a half million
PlayStations that they've sold.
But the one thing I would say, and much low talking about cables, is riveting. That obviously that's one of the things everyone needs. They need cables to hook their consoles up to their to their tellies or their consoles up to their controllers. The one thing I would say is that you should shop around. And part of it is, you know, does this have the specs that I need? If you've only got a 1080p telly, you don't need the all singing, all dancing 140 hertz at 4K one. Do shop around. Make sure you know the specs of your telly that you're buying for. And, and obviously there's other things like, does it look nice? Do I trust the company?
Yeah.
What's their warranty period like? And, you know, do bear that in mind. But, you know, they sound like decent quality cables from what you said. But
I think from having had bad experiences in previous generations, like, I definitely think there's an element of buy cheap, buy twice to some of these type of things.
The best value is not always the cheapest, after all.
No, exactly. And, you know, poor man shoes arguments and all that type of stuff. But, I do think, as I said, this is a company that is now something that I will look out for in the future and know that, okay, I might have to spend a couple more pounds to get it, but it at least feels like I'm getting a perceived amount of value for that extra money, and I don't mind that. So, yeah, like as I said, it solved a few problems for me this week and has done a few good things, basically.
So the next thing I was going to talk to you about, and I was going to ask you a bit more about Demon's Souls, but I think I'm just going to limit it to this. Did you play Demon's Souls using these cables?
Yes, I did. And okay, that's all I want to know. Fantastic. Especially as my HDR seems to have been turned off for some time, possibly since I got my new replacement TV, but still.
Lovely. Well, I mean, again, I did have two games to talk about, but I think we're probably just going to have to get to the news because Tim's talked to you about cables for 25 minutes.
Well, yeah, but sorry, it was necessary. I wouldn't mind hearing about, you know, both of those games from you at some point. I am interested.
Yes, so the cliffhanger of Dan will talk about this at some point is Tetris Effect Connected. I think the quick summary is it's Tetris on mind-altering drugs.
I love that game, it's great.
Well, the one thing I would say, genuinely, health warning, don't go anywhere near this if you have a history of epilepsy. It's just crazy. It really is. It's like overwhelmingly shiny. And the other one, which I briefly played, but I'll talk about probably in more detail next week, was the demo of Monster Hunter Rise on the Switch, which...
Yeah. Does it work well on the Switch, just generally?
It was a solid okay.
Yeah, that's what I was worried about.
It's a solid... Okay, it's asking a lot of the Switch, and it might not quite do, but I'll formulate some thoughts on that for you next week. But that's what we've done, played, or what Tim Dunn played or played with. And before we go, we really ought to just knock on the door of what's been going on this week in the video games.
Is that just because it's funny, Dan? You like kicking people when they're down?
Well, this is more kind of I told you so. Turns out, Amazon, Google, looking at you, if you have an absolute metric arse ton of money, that does not guarantee success. If you can't just magic up a game studio out your back pocket. So, Google, purveyors and peddlers of platform such as Stadia, one of the big things that people were quite excited about with Stadia when it was initially announced before reality set in on the good folks at Google Stadia, was this idea that they were going to be having some unique first-party games, and they got some quite big names in. You know, I think one of the big names that they brought in was Jade Raymond. And, you know, she was one of the big kind of creative powerhouses and directors behind the Assassin's Creed franchise. And it was considered quite a big win that she'd gone over to Google to spearhead their internal studios. But it's been what, kind of 12, 18 months since kind of that whole Stadia announcement, possibly a bit longer, and there's no evidence of anything novel coming out of those studios.
But if they expected there to be by now, don't you think that is a little bit ambitious for a game that supports the technology that they were trying to drive? I can't see how many small indie games are going to leverage that properly. So you're going to need a big AAA game.
I mean, you can't
make a big AAA game in that time.
I mean, I think part of the challenge is I think Google's so used to just throwing money at something and it happens.
Yeah.
And
or not.
But again, and I mean, and Google's pretty ruthless when it comes to kind of shedding dead weight. If it thinks it's not getting anywhere or something, it'll just discontinue it.
Yeah.
So Google Stadia are actually shutting down their own internal game development studios and are going to be focusing more on third-party development. I mean, whether or not that means, hey, Netflix of games of all these other kinds, well, that could be a good thing, but it probably won't. So they are. So the closure is affecting about 150 employees, which is, you know, obviously,
which is
really sad. But it does sound like Google are going to try and do them a solid. And for those that want to stay on at the company, they're going to try and find them roles elsewhere. But the kind of the scuttlebutt is that actually the environment to create games just wasn't right at Google Stadia. That perhaps it was. Almost too straight-laced, almost too kind of too by the books. You know, they weren't really resourced to succeed. So, you know, it's a shame. I honestly think that Stadia's days are numbered unless they have an amazing change in business strategy.
Well, this might be that first point of business strategy, but I just can't see how this will help.
No.
Like, the one thing they could have done is have some of their own unique titles leveraging their technology to the best advantage. The one thing we will say, and I haven't seen many people talk about, but we just don't know how far away from actually delivering a game. As I said, I don't think it's reasonable to expect something in this time period, but we don't know what state they were in. They may have been showing stuff off and going, we will have this ready in 3 years' time. And someone just said, well, no, like, we just don't know. The one thing I will say, though, it does seem to be, because you said there was a told-you-so element to this, because we kind of predicted this a while ago. Like, it didn't seem like they set this up for success. I said about the whole, like, getting indie game developers on the very last minute, and that seemed like a really terrible time to be doing it when you needed all these people on board day one at launch. And, yeah, I just... For me, the biggest problem, and I've seen a few other people mention it, but the biggest problem is this is a load of creative talent that has just literally gone to waste for a year and a half now. And they just think what they could have been doing elsewhere in video games and what we could have seen as a result. It just seems that, yeah, Google threw a load of money at this and took something away from gamers as a result of it. And I just, yeah, I just,
I mean,
it,
I still,
that just
I still,
annoys me a bit.
I still think cloud, kind of the cloud gaming is great as an adjunct, as an alternate place to pick up where you left off when you're away from home or your consoles. And I think, and I still maintain, I think Microsoft's strategy is the right one.
Yeah, and they did kind of hint at the fact that they may be doing something with the technology for third parties, whether that's like third parties using their platform or possibly them selling their tech to someone else. I don't know. Like, it would make sense to possibly sell this to PlayStation as a replacement for PlayStation Now. Possibly. Yeah. I don't know.
I doubt that'll happen in a month of Sundays. But that's not the only news this week, Tim.
No.
Someone's, rather than getting rid of something, someone's bought something. And that someone is Embracer, and the
whole
thing
box
they bought,
of things.
They did, and then the thing they brought was Gearbox. So it's joining Embracer Group as a wholly owned subsidiary of them. And for those of you who don't know, Embracer is a Swedish company, and they were originally known as THQ Nordic. So it's worth an absolutely eye-watering sum of money. How much would you pay for a box of Gears, Tim?
£19.50.
Well, you would have been outbid, sir, because they paid $1.3 billion.
See, this is why we never win any of these bids,
right?
Dan.
I know. and it's going to see all of these 550 peeps who work at Gearbox become the seventh official pillar of the Embracer Empire.
And the other groups include, obviously, THQ Nordic, who they originally mm-hmm. were, Saber Interactive, Koch Media, I insist on pronouncing it like that,
okay.
Decca Games, Amplifier Game Invest, and Coffee Stain Holding. And I'm not entirely sure what the last two of them are.
Yep, couldn't tell you about the last three of those, I don't think, but still.
Yep, but it sounds like Randy Pitchford's still going to be there, running the things, but presumably now subject to even stricter human resourcing laws.
Yep, wasn't this at one point owned by 2K? No,
yeah, it was.
Gearbox?
They're still going to publish the games.
Do you reckon 2K got fed up of keeping Randy Pitchford quiet and
yes,
have given the job to someone else, basically? Yeah. We'll still publish the games,
fed
but
up of your nonsense.
Just control this magic moron if you can, please.
Exactly. just get him out, please, for the love of God.
He has been silent for a while, fortunately, but hey.
Yeah, I know, right?
No new tricks from him lately.
No, but one of the things that does help the world go round, certainly if you're American and capitalist, is suing people.
Oh, good.
So, five gamers, count them, five.
Five.
In California, IA.
Yeah.
They've taken Valve to court.
Oh.
And do you know why they've taken Valve to court?
For not making Half-Life 3?
Well, there's that, but that's a whole other story. Apparently, Valve have been abusing their power.
Of not making games?
I don't know. Well, I mean, to be fair, what this is all about, it's kind of got a bit of an antitrusty flavour to it, I suppose. So the lawsuit claims that I think we'll all agree that Valve, the kind of the Steam platforms, remains the most kind of dominant player in the PC games market, especially as things have now moved on to kind of digital purchases. And this lawsuit kind of intimates that the only reason Steam or Valve are able to maintain that position is not because they're undercutting and doing better business than their compatriots, but that they, when a game goes to Steam, that they require the developer to sign a what's generally known as a most favored nation clause, which means that. So it basically says, look, you're not going to undercut us on any other platform. The price you sell, you know, on our store will at least match the lowest price anywhere else that you sell it.
Okay.
So it's all about Steam not being undercut by a competitor.
Yeah.
So it's all, you know, and I think it's not an unreasonable kind of comment on the situation. And, you know, the lawsuit specifically says that, it postulates that requiring developers to enter that clause hinders innovation by creating an artificial barrier of entry for other platforms. Now, I'm not saying that the one thing I would love to see is another 18 storefronts appear on the PC for which I need to install.
Because gamers took so well to Epic launching a store, eh?
I know, right? So the interesting thing is that...
Isn't it good for PC gamers to have a unified platform and a default kind of thing? I would have thought that was better than having a billion launchers.
But
right?
If it's anti-competitive. I mean, I think the argument is that... I can kind of see where they're coming from, and I do agree...
Yeah, I don't entirely disagree with the argument, but it seems a bit flimsy.
It is, but I mean, the other odd thing is that they're including a bunch... They're kind of roping in a bunch of other companies as co-defendants, also point the finger at them. Basically, it's like CD Projekt, Ubisoft, KChamp, Rust, Devolver Digital. They're all included as co-defendants, and with the kind of with these guys who filed the lawsuits, basically saying that you're just as guilty because you kind of agree with what Steam are doing.
I mean, I guess you could argue that this is tantamount to price fixing as well. Like it seems like a legal way round of. Almost, yeah, fixing prices so that you won't be undercut by your competitors and stuff.
Pricing.
I can understand Valve wanting that clause as well, though. No, like, if you go to the bother of putting it out there and you get a load of sales, and then they put a special offer on the Epic Store at half the price, I can understand why they be annoyed and want you to match that price.
Yeah,
you know? I kind of get that from their business angle as well.
And don't get me wrong, it's really annoying when something isn't on the platform other than Steam, like the Hitman stuff not being on Steam for ages is a pain in the bum, for example. But that, I mean, I think the problem is, I mean, Valve have the luxury of being able to dictate terms from a bully pulpit in some ways here.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, well, if you want your game to succeed, you're going to have to be on our platform. But I would say the one thing that, obviously, getting the best price is one thing that will make you buy a game on a particular platform. But the other thing that I would say is there has been some real good innovation in some of the other platforms, like good old games with the good old Games Galaxy 2.0 launcher. They've got actually tries to bring everything into a single place. So that's, you know, innovation is in other places. But I do agree that, you know, this is probably something that does need to be looked at. And, you know, I applaud them for calling Valve out on it. I don't think it's going to go anywhere, to be honest with you, but I think it's good that this is an issue that gets discussed, even if trying to make just about every other big publisher complicit with it is a little bit of a stretch, I think. A little bit of a stretch, but there we go. There we go, Timothy. Have you got any exciting legal stories you can tell with us? Or are you all funned out after talking about cables?
No, well, I don't know if you saw a lot. There's been a lot more chatter and a lot more people trying to explain the whole thing that we explained last week with the GameStop
I think
prices.
I understand it. I finally understand it. I understand
it.
Borrow some bananas.
Yeah. And then the price of the banana goes down, and then you buy the bananas at a cheaper cost than you sold them for, and then give them back to the person you borrowed them from.
Yeah, all the while going, yes, these are your identical bananas. Honest.
But yeah.
Yeah.
But that's why the stock price going up makes the people that shorted on it out of pocket, because the price has gone up and they now need to spend more when they were expecting to spend less. So,
well, whole other rant that we do not have time to go into, Tennessee, all right, that we do not have time to go into, is the fact that somehow it's okay when big, horrible hedge funds and those well-versed in the moderately, potentially slightly corrupt way in which international stock markets work, it's okay if the people who do that all the time do it. But if Joe Public gets wind of actually they're completely manipulating the system, that's somehow bad and they get in trouble for it.
There's one thing I learned this week that I want to add to that conversation quickly, because it's a warning for any of our listeners and anyone else. We did kind of mention the, you know, be careful about investing in money, especially at this time, especially when you're behind the curve sort of thing. But one of the things, and one of the things has always been my misgivings, I actually looked at possibly investing, and I was even thinking of like tracking a few gaming companies to see the value go up and down as games came out and see how that kind of, I was planning on possibly writing an article. I spoke to a kind of broker and stuff and sort of looked at it. But I was also having a conversation with someone a couple of weeks ago, and I don't trust, I said before any of this stuff hit with Robin Hood and all that type of stuff, I had someone trying to convince me to actually go and invest in one of the apps. And I said to them, I don't trust those apps because I don't believe in the primary thing. The stuff that they've been hung up for this week is democratizing investment, basically. And I don't think they're doing that. What I think they are deliberately doing is having a portion of the market be sluggish to react so that they pick up the bill when more informed people are able to get their money out quicker and therefore not gather as much losses. And I learned this week that they actually have a phrase for the sluggishness.
Ooh.
And it's called dumb money. And that's what they want. They want in the market, they want a number of uninformed investors, dumb money, to sluggishly react to things so they don't get held. They are less likely to get to foot the bill when massive losses occur, because the people that have, you know, brokers informing them and people doing it on their behalf are able to get out quicker, and then the bill is picked up by all the people in these small kind of apps that have maybe only invested a couple of dollars each, but you get enough hundreds of thousands of people doing that adds up to quite a lot of money. Yeah, and it helps soften the blow, basically. So the literal reason why these apps exist is not because they love you and they want to earn loads of money for you, and there is the possibility of doing that, but it is a gamble, and it's a big gamble a lot of the time.
That's what the stock market is.
And you are being labelled for investing this way as dumb money. So please avoid being dumb and don't invest your money this way.
Yeah, absolutely. But anyway, Tim, we're running short on time, so I'm going to make you shut the heck up. That's what I'm going to do. We've had some community feedback, and by feedback, I mean questions. And by questions, I mean this one from Ed, a.k.a. Jokes.
Well, we had two, but... Yeah.
We had two. No, we're going to get two.
Okay.
What is, Tim, an utterly baffling story in the games industry that tickles you to no end, but is almost impossible to explain to quote-unquote normal people... without sounding like you need to be sectioned under the Mental Health Act. Fun fact, I could do that, so don't anger me. I'll do it right now. Don't make me, Tim. If you're talking about tables again, all right?
Are you gonna go through his example?
The example is the story of how the rapper voice actor threatened a kid over $100 and a Flash animation.
I think there's many, like... There's just Nintendo stories you could go with that would be, in that sort of... But I think one relevant from this week, the discourse on the last couple of weeks, the discourse on Tall Vampire Lady. Yeah. Try and explain that one to someone outside
Nine
games.
9 foot six in heels, apparently.
and the amount of, comparison shots of, this is an Xbox Series X, this is a fridge, this
banana
is a vampire lady.
Banana for scale. I think for me, and this is a really... guess what? It's a Destiny one.
Okay, yep. Two Just tokens. Explaining that game to other people right. probably makes you sound that way,
Two
Dan.
Two tokens in a blue.
Right.
Tokens in a blue. So basically,
no idea what you're talking about.
In one of their big kind of, streams hyping up a new release,
they're sounds like porn.
There's this new amazing, public event we've got. It's the most rewarding ever. We've activated the heroic mode on it. It's going to give us really great loot. And they opened both of the chests that you got. It didn't just give one chest, it gave two because it's a super awesome event. And they got a completely common item and two vendor tokens, and the face of the community manager was just like, he was just like, not this again. I mean, to his credit, he kept his cool, but he was just like, how am I gonna spin this? What's going on? So that was one of my favorite ones. So Bleezy asks, what game and film series should have a crossover event similar to Breakpoint and Terminator?
Ooh.
I still think Left 4 Dead and Starship Troopers would be great.
Oh, yeah, that's not bad. I'll go for another relevant one from this week. So let's do Destruction All-Stars and Death Race.
Ooh, nice. Slightly derivative, but nice.
Well, it's slightly different to the modes that are available and kind of works in that world. So, yeah.
What would I like to see? I would like to see Resident Evil.
Yep.
And the repair shop.
Yeah.
Yep. And I'm just going to leave it at that. I would just like to see them trying to fix the dystopian world, or probably the OG Resident Evil, it was in the manor. Like, everything's a bit decrepit, and they're trying to fix everything in there. I just want to fix this typewriter so I can play
my game. Yeah, Veronica, that's what I was going to say. Please fix the typewriter so I can save again.
Yeah, exactly. So that would be my crossover I'd like to see. So anyway, I think that is about it. There is some news we forgot to talk about this week, but run out of time. I'm sure Coleman will join us and want to talk about the Mass Effect Legendary Edition next week. In fact, I'm going to remind him to do so by typing something in the agenda.
It does look nice and shiny.
It does look nice and shiny, but we haven't got time. We're all out of time.
No.
All we've got time is to remind you to go to www.
No time, Dan.
But Tim, website. People need to go,
There's no time for a website, Dan.
www.bigredbarrel.com, facebook.com/bigredbarrel, twitter.com/bigredbarrel, probably twitch.tv/bigredbarrel. We very occasionally.
Too much slashing for my liking.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, we will be back next week, hopefully, with a coal man in tow.
Ooh.
Wouldn't that be exciting? He is a man of mystery.
Show.
We shall doubtless find out that his mysteries weren't at all mysterious. He was just having to work a late shift at work or something. He might be being Batman. He might be. I think it's unlikely. Cool.
Never know.
So anyway, that's your lot. All that really is left for us to do is to remind you that I have been Dan.
I might have been Tim, and there might not be anyone else to follow me afterwards because Coleman's not here.
Wow, that, yeah. You really are a halfwit. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. And until next time, dear listeners, doodle bye.
You and your ears are quite welcome for the podcasting goodness that you just heard. Why not roll on over to BigRedBarrel.com for more podcasts, news, reviews, and videos from the biggest, reddest site on the internet, BigRedBarrel.com.